Good morning, everyone. We're reading in Book 7, the Book of Yoga, and we've reached page 538 at the break. In this book, we have followed Savitri on her search to find her soul in her body, moving through the different levels of subtle sheaths to find the home of the soul in matter. And she's had this wonderful experience of contacting her central being, the Supreme Divine Mother, which has brought about a transformation in her nature. All the chakras have been awakened, and especially the deep heart center, the psychic center. And this has brought her into a wonderful state of happiness and confidence. When she looks into the future now, she doesn't see Satyavan surrounded by the dark shadow of death anymore. Instead, she sees him surrounded by a wonderful sun, which seems to indicate that he will live a very full and long life. And she has glimpses of the future. She sees him ruling as a king in the world of men, and very close to her, not just close in spirit, but close in body. So we read that very happy part, but we are told that this was the sun before darkest night. In the same first section, we were shown how Savitri's inner world is just devastated, laid waste by the experience of a force of denial and negativity, which claims to rule the universe. And it's very convincing, this dreadful, destroying voice. But that voice is followed by another voice, the voice of light after the voice of night. And that voice explains to her that this wonderful psychic realization which she has come to her, she should try to keep it secret as long as possible. It also explains to her that she has not come just for that liberation for herself. She's come to show the way for human beings. And last week we read that she is advised that in order to fulfill her mission, if you want to make your life a bridge between the earth and heaven, if you want to save this universe of toil and suffering, you have to be able to feel and bear the vast universal suffering as your own. But in order to do that, in order to be able to bear the suffering of the whole universe, you are going to have to widen your consciousness so that it is vaster than the universe itself. So that even if the world is destroyed, it will just be a small passing storm in some remote corner of your consciousness, the vast infinity that you have become. So the voice explains to her that you will have to, in order to be have the capacity to loosen this vast chain, you have to draw back from the world that the idea has made, the creative idea from which this whole creation has arisen. You will have to draw back from your mind's selection from the infinite and from your senses, the interpretation of your senses, what the way that it is interpreting the infinitesimals dance, the dance of the atoms, which makes this the appearance of this material universe. So finally, it tells her, you had this experience of denial. This is a challenge to you. You have to respond by accepting to be nothing. Consent to be nothing and none. Dissolve time's work. Cast off thy mind. Step back from form and name. Annul thyself that only God may be. So that is how the first section of this canto ends. And in the rest of the canto, we shall see how Savitri puts this into practice. We read the whole passage last week, so now we will look a couple of sentences at a time at this whole process. And we can take it as a teaching, this step-by-step process. Sri Aurobindo has passed through this process. The mother has explained it in her commentaries to the children in the ashram playground, her commentaries on the Dhammapada, the different stages of drawing back from our mind's selection from the infinite and our senses' gloss upon the universe. So we're on page 538 at the break. You will need a book. You've got it, yes. Page 538 at the break. You'll begin, Margaret.
Thus spoke the mighty and uplifting voice, and Savitri heard. She bowed her head and mused, plunging her deep regard into herself. In her soul's privacy, in the silent night. Aloof and standing back, detached and calm, a witness of the drama of herself, a student of her own interior scene, she watched the passion and the toil of life, and heard in the crowded thoroughfares of mind the unceasing tread and passage of her thoughts. All she allowed to rise, that chose to steer, calling, compelling not, forbidding not. She left all to the process formed in time, and the free initiative of nature's will.
Thank you. Anybody would like to ask or comment on these first sentences?
I just want to understand process, form, and time.
In the unfolding of time, there's a natural process that has been established. Matter has evolved to the state that we know now. Life has emerged. Human thinking beings have emerged. And she knows, because she's been shown earlier on in her quest, that she's carrying that whole history of the universe in herself. And now she's been asked to detach herself from all that. And as a first step, she's looking into herself and observing. And she's just witnessing. She's becoming the witness of her own inner scene, the movements, the drama. So she doesn't call anything. She doesn't suppress anything. She's just, she doesn't forbid or reject anything. She's just watching. She's leaving everything to the natural process. What comes up? The free initiative of nature's will. Nature acting through her. She's detaching her consciousness and observing that. This is the first step. So what does she notice when she does this observing? Patricia?
Thus following the complex human play, she heard the prompter's voice behind the scenes, perceived the original libretto's set and the organ theme of the composer force. All she beheld that surges from man's depths, the animal instincts prowling mid life's trees, the impulses that whisper to the heart, and passion's thunder chase sweeping the nerves. She saw the powers that stare from the abyss, and the wordless light that liberates the soul. At most, her gaze pursued the birth of thought.
Thank you. So any of us, if we managed to look clearly into ourselves, we can perhaps become aware, as Savitri becomes aware. She's just watching the complex human play that's going on in all of us, all the many, many different kinds of impulses and movements that are there. A prompter is the man in the theater who sits below with the orchestra, and if the actors forget their lines, he has to remind them. I think in French he's called the siffleur, no? The prompt.
This whole thing is an act that we're in.
We're in a drama. Yes, the complex human play is going on, and there's somebody down there to remind us. Prompting us, no? Which might not always be the right thing. So from behind the scenes, there's that prompter suggesting this or that. And maybe there's not only one prompter. Maybe there are many different prompters. But she's also able to see the libretto that has been set. The text, the libretto is the sung text of an opera, a drama. Oh, it's the words, the message that gets conveyed in the words. And behind that, I mean, that's the original libretto that has somehow been set by the creative force. And behind, there's the prompter's voice, there's the libretto, and behind all that is the organ theme of the composer force, the supreme creative force playing on many, many, many notes on this vast organ of the universe. The organ is a very complex kind of musical instrument that with many, many voices and notes and tones.
So
It's something in the universe which prompts us each individually according to our propensities and our history, our evolutionary history and so on. Yes, Don.
It's a silly thing to mention, but music as we know it over the past few hundred years, organ and libretto don't go together.
Organ and libretto don't normally go together, that's correct. But here we have to see that these are on different levels. No? She looks into herself, those prompters may be of all kinds. And the libretto is somehow a score and a theme or an opera that's been set for humanity as a whole, and each of us has a role to play in it. And behind that, there's the original intention, which gets expressed as on an organ through all the different individuals in the universe. We're all part of that.
That's mother's music. We don't know what she is composing in us when we listen to that.
Yes.
Interesting.
So she sees everything that comes up from our unconscious depths, no, deeper levels. There we've still got the animal instincts. They're still prowling around under the trees of life. There are impulses that whisper to the heart. And there's sometimes very, very strong drives, passions, thunder chase, sweeping through the nerves. She's able to see that there are dark powers staring at us from the abyss, the deep, dark levels of the universe. But at the same time, from above, there's coming this wordless light that liberates the soul. So I think this is just a very brief summary of the things that she sees when she looks into herself. But mostly what she's interested in is to see how thought gets born. And that's what gets expressed next. Mihong, you would read. There are lots of people at the back, if you can raise your voice a bit.
Often tries from the look of selfish mind, she paused not to survey the official case, the issue of forms from the office of the brain, its factory of thought sounds, and soundless words and voices stored within unheard by men, its mint and the treasury of shining coin. These were but counters in mind's simple game, a gramophone's discus, a reproduction's film, a list of signs, a cipher, and a code. In our unseen, subtle body thought is born.
Thank you. Anybody would like to say what they think this first sentence is about? It means an office. An office is a place where you go to get some work done. There's somebody there, he makes you fill in a form, and then there's a whole process that goes on. So he says the brain is like that, it's an office. It might even be a kind of digitized office. You type in, or you indicate something. No, and then there's an automatic response, automized response. Yeah.
A franchise.
A franchise means set free. Savitri is free. She's already liberated from the way that surface mind looks at things. So she's not interested in all that automatic stuff that goes on in the brain. She doesn't pause to look at that because she's realized that this is just a kind of mechanical process, a factory of thought sounds, soundless words. It's something that's recorded, already recorded. or it's a film, or it's a list of signs. It's a certain kind of code which is coded into our brain. And this is the mint and treasury, of the currency of thought, of everyday thought, the surface mind produces in us almost automatically in each of us, in a, perhaps a slightly different way for each of us. So that is, she knows about that. She realizes that mechanical aspect of surface mind and its automatic responses. So she... Yes, or the words, yeah. And it's the mint where they're made, they're stamped, the same coins over and over again, and where they're stored, and where they can be given out, and where they get passed around among human beings. No. Mm.
Why is using a shining coin?
Well, when you get a new coin, it's all shining.
Freshly minted.
Yeah. So you think it's something new, but it's actually just the same as all the other coins that have been minted.
An interesting thing is the last two sentences read, a gramophone's disc, a reproductive organ.
The next sentence says about our subtle body.
Oh, yeah, in our unseen subtle body, thought is born, or it comes from the cosmos.
Yes, so this is very important. Either it comes up in us from the subtle body, from whatever mixture of influences, or it comes to us from the universe. And we if we look even just a little bit, we don't have to go very far in to notice that there's a kind of mental field. Just like around the world there's a thin layer of living matter, there's also an atmosphere of mental matter, of thoughts that are being propagated all the time. Of course, I speak to you, but also there's the internet and the radio and the TV and particularly the news and the newspapers and the magazines and the films. All that is producing a kind of shared atmosphere, which unfortunately at present is very polluted. The atmosphere of human thought. And there are only a few places where some purification is being done, some measures are being taken to purify them, the mental atmosphere. Yes, Audrey?
Some people see thought forms.
Yes.
And they come in colors and they
yes.
are quite the same from person to person who sees them.
You mean that the people can recognize each other's forms? They are familiar?
They recognize the form, not necessarily from where it comes.
Mm. Yes.
And they're all floating around.
Yes. Yeah. Mother said sometimes that our mind is like a marketplace, you know, where all these things are getting exchanged and there's a kind of buzz going on with that. And it, especially if you are sensitive, it's very difficult to get away from it. I remember a little boy I was looking after at a very difficult time in Oroville's history. And he said, I don't know why, but I can't think of anything nice anymore. You know, so sad, yeah.
This the little boy.
Yes, sensitive person, yes.
This phrase, mint and treasury of shining coin,
yes,
also suggests to me, because a mint is the wealth of some kind, it is the wealth of coins, and this gives a sense of power to us, because wealth, that,
yes.
that material wealth, and yet, this wealth is not the real wealth.
No.
It is also, it's illusory at some stage.
And yet it has a certain power, no?
It has a huge power.
This currency of surface mind, the way it gets spread in the world, it has effects which are quite difficult to counteract.
That word in the next line, counters. This means like the little pieces that you push around on the game board.
Yes, you know the game of Ludo. You throw the dice and then you can push your counter further, or the snakes and ladders or whatever. Yeah.
They're
I'm sorry, Mom, you wanted to say something.
I was wondering if you could talk a little about thought being born in the subtle body.
Yes, that's the second sentence, no? So, of course, here he's just hinting at it very, very briefly, and later on in the canto we shall see it more thoroughly. But we have not only this physical body, and particularly emotions and life movements and thoughts, they move around in our subtle body. Of course, the materialists believe that everything's generated in our brain, but even then they're generated in the form of vibrations. There's something subtle about them, no? So that's where the thoughts emerge. Or they come to us from outside.
So would it be different types, like, let's say, memory would might be in the subtle body because it's personal, and then other, some other, sorry, I was saying, maybe perhaps memory is in comes
stored.
The subtle body, stored, and then other parts of
information. New things come from outside, perhaps, yeah. So we have to observe and find out. Each of us can do it. It's a challenge. Well, this is not only for Savitri. This is for all of us.
I think it's better to get it from the subtle body, no? Because Shrivindra described the kingdom of subtle matter. Didn't he say that all things are beautiful and all things true? And that's where he's at, in the subtle world. Because these are the two options. You either get it from the subtle body,
well,
or you get it from
as
the
I body. Say, further on in the canto, we're going to have a much more detailed look at this, and then we can decide for ourselves.
But this mind symbol game, everything in mind is only a symbol, right?
Playing a play of symbols.
Even Savitri is a symbol.
Particularly, but what a wonderful, resonant, powerful symbol. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even before the idea of thought, where did the thoughts descend from? We can even ask perhaps another question. Where do the words come from?
Yes.
Because where are the words before they are uttered? Where are they? Are they they're just sitting there in the library and you put one word at a time? Where are the words before they are? And then from there, where are the thoughts before they are thunk?
Yes.
And then a whole lot of other things.
So I think we'll know much more about that by the time we reach the end of the canto. Tone, yeah.
There's a question about the second line of the page.
She paused, not...
That was my question. Is it she paused not to survey?
No, she paused not. She didn't pause. She didn't spend any time on that official case. She thought, well, that's all just mechanical. That's not interesting. I want to see the deeper sources.
Shrivindra is just explaining here what the surface mind does, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what he's doing.
Yes. So shall we go on? Wonderful description. Jocelyn.
From our soul, step down to native growth, luminous with mystery lips and wonderful eyes. Born from a fountain, emerge some burning face, and mix the light and love and passionate peace. Aspire to heaven, and bless the world, or let the fancy like a sweet moon across the dark sky of man's common day, amidst the doubtful certitude of earth's law, this mystery of beauty of death gets form. I think a proud sweet musician will but
could you please speak a little louder?
Oh, sorry.
Yes.
As if a flower prince in a deep blue room, love in a golden vest, one living rose.
Such a marvelous image. No? Let's stop there. So these are thoughts that are emerging from her subtle body, from her soul, from her heart. There are different kinds of thoughts that emerge from the heart, but all of them have this characteristic of intensity. Some are aspiring to heaven, others are embracing the world, and others are leading the imagination, the fancy. They are lighting up possibilities, led the fancy like a fleeting moon, a moon that gets covered by clouds, across the dull sky of man's common days. We need thoughts like this that light things up, even if only for a few moments. No? And sometimes it might be that a thought emerges from our heart which really gives a form. There's our Earth's law, all the wisdom, the accumulated knowledge that we have of humanity. No? These are doubtful certitudes. We may feel sure about them, but they can always be questioned. But if something gives form to our faith, it gives the celestial beauty of faith gave form. And then there's this wonderful contrast between the room, the dingy room, and there on the walls there are some paintings, dingy paintings, no? But on a table there's a golden vase, one living rose. And then there's nothing doubtful about that. It's so beautiful, so convincing, so such a strong influence if we experience that contrast. Helmut, please speak as loudly as possible. Read as loud as possible.
So Marto just said in her heart, the compelled the forward stride, the upward look, till wonder leaped into the illumined breast, and life grew marvelous with transfiguring hope. A scene will pondered between the brows. Thoughts, glistening angels, stood behind the brain in flashing armor, folding hands of prayer, and poured heaven's rays into the earthly thought. Imaginations flamed up from her breast, unearthly beauty, touches of surpassing joy and plans of miracle, dreams of delight. Around her navel lotus clustering clothes were large sensations of the teeming worlds, streamed their dumb movements of an unformed idea, invading the small sensitive flower globe. They brought their mute, unuttered resonances to kindle the figures of a heavenly speech.
Thank you. A thaumaturge is somebody who can work miracles. And Sri Aurobindo says that human beings are thaumaturgists. We can work miracles, but we don't know it. But this is a miracle worker here deep in Savitri's heart who can transform things.
Similar to the master of existence lurks in us.
Let's read to the end and then I'll speak. She seems to be seeing that thought emerges through the chakras, through the centers. No? There's the deep soul center, the heart center. He speaks quite a lot about that. And then the will here. There's the mind center, thoughts there. In Savitri's case, such beautiful thoughts, you know, warrior thoughts, sacred warriors. They are in flashing armor, but they have their folded hands of prayer and they're pouring light into the earthly form. And then the imaginations are coming.
It seems like they come from beings, too, like...
As if there are beings, or in they come in the form of beings. Yes. Yes. I don't know, there's a painting here. Here, you can look at it afterwards, but it's showing all the beautiful thoughts coming from different parts of the being, with eyes, they have eyes and faces and hands. So around the navel lotus, there's the sensations of the teeming worlds, not only this material world, but all the other worlds in the subtle planes. And each of them is streaming in their movement of unformed ideas, things that are not yet formed as thought, something to do with what you were saying, sir. And those movements come up into the throat center, which is the expressive communicating point. No? They are bringing their mute, unuttered resonances, their vibrations, their silent vibrations, and those kindle speech, in this case, the figures of a heavenly speech. Shall we go on, or anybody would like to? Anandi? Oh, Don, yeah.
I'm trying to catch, but can't quite, the small sensitive flower of the throat. This is
the chakra. It's where mind and thought and emotion and feeling meet, so it's connected with all kinds of creativity, but also expression. This is where we speak from.
Is it a chakra?
Yeah, it's a chakra, yeah. And it's just got two petals. It's just got two petals. Some of them have 1,000 petals, and others, but this is a small, sensitive flower here in the throat. Oh, well, perhaps I'm wrong. Yes.
2016 is liable to be a creative year then.
For sure. Sorry about that. Okay. Anyway, let's follow his words.
Creative expression.
Yeah. So let's go on. There's below.
Aside from the worldless wish and longings of physical sweetness and ecstasy, translated into the accent of the cry, they grasp on objects, their gloves and souls. Her body's thoughts climb from her conscious beings and carry the yearning with mystic crown, where matchless murmurs meet in their father.
Thank you. So he'd mentioned the navel center, and then there's a lower one, no? That's where the desires form. They don't use words, but they express their wishes and their longings. And these get translated into thoughts. Her body's thoughts. Climbed from her conscious limbs and carried their yearnings to its mystic crown. There, nature's murmurs, all the things that nature is saying, they meet the ineffable, what cannot be expressed. So this is Savitri having a wonderful experience as she observes all these movements in herself. He goes back to us human beings. Handel, you'll read. I'm sorry, you'll have to read much louder than that.
But for the mortal present in outward mind, all must present.
Present.
Their passports at each door. Discard, they must don the official cap and mask, or pass as manufacturers of the brain. Unknown, their secret truth and the hidden source. Only to the inner mind they speak direct, put on a body and assume a voice. Their passage is seen, their message heard and known. Their birthplace and their natal mark revealed. Understand the compass to an immortal sight. Our nature's messengers to the witness.
Thank you.
The all here refers to the thoughts coming from the subtle.
Yes, or wherever they come from, they have to present their papers
to the outer mind.
To the outer mind, yes. This is for the mortal prisoned in outward mind. The mortal part of us is the part that is subject to death, that's ruled by death, or the more physical part of us. And we are imprisoned in this mind that's turned outwards. But so that's in all these thoughts must present their passports at its door when they enter into our surface mind, wherever they are coming from. And then they have to put on the official uniform. They have to put on the cap and the mask. No? Or they have to pass as manufacturers of the brain. This is something that our physical brain has thought up. And in that way, we are not aware of their secret truth. We don't know where they have come from. Their source is hidden. But we do have an inner mind, not this surface mind. We have a deeper inner mind which is able to hear them, these thoughts speak directly. And then they can put on a body, a form, a recognizable form. They can speak to our inner mind. Then the way they have come is seen and their message is heard and known. Their birthplace, where were they born? And their special mark, their birthmark, the mark of which indicates where they were born, is revealed. So they reveal themselves, they stand confessed to an immortal sight, not to the mortal surface brain, but to our immortal part. And all these thoughts are the messengers from our nature to the witness soul. To the witness soul, they can speak and convey what they have to say. But this doesn't happen in the surface mind. So this is a general statement. This applies to all of us, in general.
These are specifically our body's thoughts, no? If you go back to line 289.
I think the subtle body, no? No, sorry. He says the thoughts are born in the subtle body or in the... They come from the cosmos. And then he went through the subtle body and expressed different kinds of thoughts that came from different centers. And he went down through all the chakras, and finally he came to the thoughts of the body. Our physical body has thoughts. It lets us know when we are hungry or thirsty or cold or need this or that, when we are comfortable and when we are not comfortable. Often we are not listening to the thoughts of the body. We ignore them. We think they're not important. But they also have their messages to convey.
But there is a shift here, and this last passage is a general statement about humans, not about savages.
Yes. Yes. Starting at line 292, Sri Aurobindo's making this general, no? For the mortal, physical beings like us, imprisoned in outward mind. All these thoughts get disguised when they come to us. Or maybe we don't even notice them at all. It would be only our inner mind that could recognize them. Or the witness soul, the observing soul. And that's what Savitri is doing now. She's concentrating in her central being and observing all this. So she sees all kinds of wonderful things. Do you like to read, Ma? No. Audrey. Loudly, please. Sorry, there's so many of us today.
Yeah. Impenetrable withheld from mortal sense, the inner chambers of the spirit's house disclosed to her their happenings and their guests, and through the secrecy of eyes look through crevices in the invisible wall. And through the secrecy of unseen doors, there came into mind's little frontal room thoughts that enlarged our limited human range, lifted the ideal's half-quenched or sinking touch. Thank you, everybody. Lifted the ideal's half-quenched or sinking torch, or peered through the finite at the infinite. A sight opened upon the invisible, and sensed the shapes that mortal eyes see not. The sounds that mortal listening cannot hear, the blissful sweetness of the intangible's touch, the objects that to us are empty air, are there the stuff of daily experience, and the common pabulum of sense and thought. The beings of the subtle realms appeared, and scenes concealed behind our earthly scene. She saw the life of remote continents and distance deafened, not to her voices far. She felt the movements crossing unknown minds, the past's events occurred before her eyes. The great world's thoughts were part of her own thought. The feelings, dumb, forever and unshared. The ideas that never found an utterance.
Thank you. The materialists, of course, don't believe in this subtle sheaths and atmospheres. And one of the dogmas of the scientism is that our consciousness is in our head, if at all we have consciousness. No. But here Sri Aurobindo is giving us a completely different view, that our individual being is a formation, a densification formation of universal planes and vibrations, substances. And so if we go deeply enough away from our surface being into our inner being, we can widen the field of our consciousness immensely. And of course there seem to be people who have naturally, without much conscious development, developed certain capacities like that of seeing things at a distance, hearing things, so on. It does happen. That's a sign that these are capacities which are potential in human beings and will evolve more and more in the future. So here Savitri is becoming aware of these capacities inside herself.
Is this close to who? To the witness
soul? No, to Savitri.
Savitri.
She becomes aware of these inner chambers of the spirit's house, and they reveal to her what goes on there, who are the guests who are coming and going. And it's as if there's a wall, an invisible wall, and there's little beings looking through at her. And there are also invisible doors, unseen doors, so those entities can pass through into this little frontal room of our mind. We can become aware there of these thoughts from deep within that enlarge our usual limited human range. So these thoughts can sometimes be very encouraging. They can lift the half-quenched or sinking torch of the ideals that inspire us. Or they can give us glimpses through the finite appearances of the infinity that lies behind.
Shalom.
Yes.
In page 538, when you start, most of her gaze pursues the birth of good.
Yeah.
Alors, you tell the Savitri pursues the birth of hope. And after that, the grief, words, thoughts were part of her own thoughts.
Yes, she's been watching where the thoughts come from. And as she widens...
But I have a question.
Yes.
Savitri, you have a connection with the soul of thoughts in the world? But the grief, words, thoughts were part of her own thoughts. Soul of
God. Where does this word soul of God? The great world's thoughts were part of her own thought. Sri Aurobindo has spoken about this experience, that he could become aware of the thoughts of people at a distance. And especially the significant thoughts, the thoughts that belong to the great world. She also becomes aware of the feelings that are not spoken out, and yet somehow they are shared. Even ideas that have never been expressed, she becomes aware of these too. The past's events, things at a distance. So these are capacities that we have heard about, telepathy and similar phenomena.
There's two, line 257 and 8, oft from her soul stepped out a naked thought,
yes,
luminous with mystery lips and wonderful eyes.
Yes.
So a thought can come
from the soul. Soul. Yes. Yes.
But thought in itself is not necessarily
not
of the soul.
My question is not coming from the soul, but yeah, the soul of thought. So.
I don't know, and
yeah.
Sri Aurobindo doesn't tell us here.
Yeah.
So you'll have to work that one out for yourself. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thank you.
But this would be the thought soul, because it says it's luminous with mystery lips and wonderful eyes.
This is a thought emerging from the soul. Yes.
Yeah.
How do you discern where the
passage is? That's it. I think you have to become very, very clear-sighted, the way that she has, to be able to discern, to find out where is the birthplace and the natal mark. Where are these thoughts coming from?
Yeah.
Otherwise, they are just disguised as the manufacturers of the brain.
And one more thing.
Yeah.
Like when we were earlier in Savitri going through the planes, and then we also discussed how to discern the movement coming in our being from mental, vital, psychic, and we should let the psychic take the lead. So once we learn to discern from where the thoughts are coming, let the thoughts act because they are supposed to, or again we should have a particular...
Yes. So. There are steps in this process, and the first step is just observing. Gradually, as you observe, you become able perhaps to discern which ones are helpful and which ones are not.
Helpful to our soul or to the humanity?
It's the same.
Yeah,
there's not much difference. Anything that's really, truly good for us is good for the whole. And it's better to concentrate on ourselves to start with.
Yes. But if you concentrate on the soul center, you're going to know if your thoughts and feelings are coming from there. Because that little voice is in there whispering, telling you whether it's right or wrong. It's like indefatigable. No? It's always alert and on guard and watching.
So there's four steps. Observing means witnessing, and then discerning, discriminating, then some control. Then you can begin to control, decide I want this one and I don't want that one, I can reject. And the final stage would be complete mastery. I think I've got those four stages right. I've written about it in one issue of Invocation, but I can't tell you which number it is just now. I'll try. Observing or witnessing, that's what she's doing now. And then discriminating. That really means finding out where they're coming from, what is their source and their value. And then you can start controlling.
I have a question. When you know somebody, but not truly, not really, but when you pursue the vibration of his thought, the vibration is very subtle, very, very.
Were you here last week when we were reading in the Life Divine on Wednesday? Yes. So there we read about the complexity of all this. No? And
it's a difficult question about.
Yes. And first perhaps we can become aware of our own selves. And of course it can happen. You become aware of a particular vibration coming from another person, but it may be something that's just passing through them, that doesn't belong to them at all. You need to experience that vibration, and so it comes through this particular person. So it's very important not to make judgments. Something like that.
But is okay. But this complex is true.
Yes. I'd like to get just a little further. We've come to now to the subconscient. Line 326, 7, 8. Page 541, 328. Raffaella, will you read, please? Can you project your voice a little more?
The dim and conscience.
Subconscious.
The dim subconscious, incoherent hints, lay bare a meaning twisted, deep, and strange. The bizarre secret of their fumbling speech, their links with underlying reality. The unseen grew visible and audible. Thoughts leap down from superconscious fear, like eagles swooping from a viewless peak. Thoughts lean up from the screen subliminal depth, like golden fishes from a hidden sea.
Thank you. The hints that come up to us from the subconscious are incoherent. They don't correspond to the logic of our rational mind. It's difficult to understand the hints that they give. No? But to Savitri's sight now, they do reveal a meaning. That meaning is twisted, but it's deep, strange, it has a significance. These hints speak in a fumbling speech. It's not clear and easily understandable. And it's conveying secrets, a bizarre secret, very strange, weird secret. No, but they do have a link, links with underlying reality. We can learn something from them. If we can understand the bizarre secret of their fumbling speech. And then he sums it up. He says, the unseen in general became visible and audible to her, sight and hearing. And some thoughts are leaping down from a superconscient field or realm far above. They come down like eagles swooping from a viewless peak. We can't even see where they have come from. No? And thoughts also gleam up from the screen subliminal depths like golden fishes from a hidden sea. As if the subliminal is subconscious is a deep sea within us. But these golden fishes come up and reveal themselves.
This is introducing us to such a variety of information that comes here and there and there and there and there and there, right? Then it says there are links with underlying reality. What is underlying reality?
Well, we can only find out by
by
absorbing these contacts. No? There is an underlying omnipresent reality of which we are all projections.
You're sure?
I'm sure. Absolutely sure. I'll tell you why I'm sure. Because Sri Aurobindo said so.
It's the divine consciousness.
He calls it omnipresent reality. That is the theme of the first book of the Life Divine. And he goes systematically through it and shows us the different levels.
It's the first garden of the Matramangira of existence. But I wanted to say one thing about this psychic, recognizing what is this thing. This line 244, the wordless light that liberates the soul. You know, Mother said that Christmas Day represents the return of the light from Egyptian times, I found out. So, anyway, so I would say the easy way is to understand that the spirit of Christmas, the Christmas spirit as they call it, generosity, peace, a will for peace on earth, and love and all that, is the liberated soul. We could keep it all the time. We would know what is the psychic.
I think we can understand on a slightly simpler level.
Yes.
All of us have circles of sympathy and love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we say we are selfish, we are taking care of our own body, we are concerned. But we extend this to our children, to our loved ones, our relatives, our husband, wife, spouse, brothers, sisters. And then we extend it further, the extended family, to our tribe, to people who are like us, our profession, people who are scientists, who are artists. We extend that sympathy to them and to people of our nation. And then we move farther up, to people of all nations. And then to other animals, the people of the kingdom of nature, to animals, to even to mosquitoes. And
I don't have much sympathy for mosquitoes.
So we are constantly, and Charles Darwin called it extending circles of sympathy.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they cannot be explained on the principle of survival of the fittest. I mean, many people don't even know what Charles Darwin himself said about many of them. So we can say we are now extending, we are trying to extend this sympathy to larger circles of consciousness and move into them.
And this we do by growing.
By growing, yes.
And as we grow, to recover the contact with our origin. And that is the experience Savitri has had, no? And now she's being shown the next step after that. Yes, Don?
I'm very puzzled. You've told me that, and I unfortunately don't remember, that Sri Aurobindo in the Life Divine spoke of, for some time, of the omniscient reality, but I can't understand...
Omnipresent. His big point is to make... Well, he makes this big point that our mind tends to make a distinction between what is real and what is not real. And this has had a great effect in the history of spirituality, because there are spiritual philosophies that have said that this whole world is actually an illusion, and the only thing that we have to do is to get out of the illusion. So he very strongly makes the point that it's not like that. We may be seeing things wrong. We may be prisoned in surface mind. We are perceiving things in a way that is not the underlying reality, but there is one unifying, omnipresent reality. It is everywhere in everything, and we are part of that. Every part of us is part of that. So if we can assimilate this way of seeing things and experiencing things, that will be a great help to us.
Thank you very much for a further explanation, but isn't that the divine consciousness, or what is simply in the West called God?
Yeah, that's one label we can put on it.
It's one with divine consciousness and with the bliss. That's why Satchitananda, it's one.
Satchitananda
is the formula that the rishis gave. They said, ultimately, this is all we can say about it. It's an infinite, eternal existence. It's a infinitely powerful consciousness. And, powerful consciousness, consciousness and force united. And it's inherently blissful.
Inherently blissful.
So that is not our experience. We experience ourselves as limited beings who aren't at all blissful. and feel helpless, limited. So what is the relationship between we limited, unblissful beings and that supreme reality?
That's the illusion. You think you're limited.
You're limited as long as you feel limited. No? So it's not a change of terminology or anything like that. It has to be a change of consciousness. So I think we have to stop there for today. But this theme about mind and is going to continue for several more pages. We'll go on with it next week.
It's going to be a really lively panto, you know. Mm-hmm. 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 Mm-hmm.
Yes, shall we listen to... We can listen to Mother reading just three passages from the end of this canto. This explains what happens to Savitri when she does the final step of gaining mastery over the thoughts. And there's illustrations here. You won't find them. Just listen. No, no, we are not there. Okay, we'll go with this.
The voice of light after the voice of night. Also, bear not thy kingdom to the source. Let all is me may accept you. God must be born on earth and be as man, that man, being human, may go human as God. Cast off thy mind, step back from form and name, annul thyself, that only God may be. Thus spoke the mighty and uplifting voice, and Savitri heard. She bowed her head and mused, plunging her deeper God into herself, in her soul's privacy, in the silent night. Her body's thought climbed from her conscious limbs and carried their yearnings to its mystic ground, where nature's murmurs meet the ineffable. Only sometimes small thoughts arose and fell, like quiet waves upon a silent sea, or ripples passing over a lonely pool, when a starry stone
thanks to Sri Aurobindo.